Woof.
Cock-a-doodle-loo. This is the Freedom Beans, broadcasting from Podbay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a crispy and crunchy 365 degrees Kelvin to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working, Randy and Michael? Can you feel it?
Yeah.
I am here.
I took a nap, but I'm up now. I fall asleep by counting sheeple. Do you count sheeple to fall asleep?
So you're a census worker. And the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
Man.
So let's hear about your electric sheeple. Are you like part Blade Runner?
No, man.
Do androids count electronic sheep? Was that the name?
Yeah.
iPhones do, but you can't hear it unless you have the special earbuds.
You got to have something plugged in, don't you? You know, I read the dumbest article, though, that was trashing the new iPhone, and I'm not an iPhone fan, but the guy who wrote it said that you can't listen to music at the same time that you charge it unless you buy some kind of gadget that costs $40, and that's really discriminatory against the poor. Poor. How dumb is that? I mean, you can buy an Android phone, you know, for $30 or $40 or $50.
I just bought one for $13.
Okay. My point.
I'm doing an experiment. I'm creating a Fiend phone, which is going to be an Android phone running nothing but the Fiends app to sell to people who have an iPhone but want to listen to the Fiends.
This sounds like what was the thing in Philadelphia, the MP3 players that had nothing but Fiends episodes.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That were given out to the homeless.
This would be Fiend the homeless. Fiend the wealthy is this one.
Yeah,
Fiend the snobby elites.
But with the Fiend the homeless, wasn't it like supposed to be little mini radios epoxied to homeless people that were also epoxied to the particular station, WHIV in Kensington?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Just wanted to clarify.
Well, whoever did that can never say anything about Steve Jobs, making you do everything his way.
He made jail cool.
So the article that I saw about the new iPhone, because I guess it doesn't have a headphone jack, I guess a number of people being the, what's the word that I want to use for them, jack wagons, educated in the government schools, decided to drill their own headphone jacks. Oh. They drill into their iPhone.
Well, because someone made a joke video that they didn't know was a joke. Did you know that? There's a video telling people to do that.
And people are falling for it.
Yeah.
I am Jack's complete lack of surprise.
They have an excuse. I am Jack's complete lack of surprise. They have an excuse, Apple does, that's almost valid of why they don't have a headphone jack and you have to buy a $750 Bluetooth
dongle.
Dongle, Bluetooth dongle. Can you say dongle on the radio? Yeah, the dongle
for
Bluetooth. But their reasoning is that the new iPhone with no holes in it is practically waterproof. Like, you can take it in the shower. But I think that's just an excuse. Don't you think you could make a little flap, you know, that would be a door on a tiny door, so you could plug any jack in there? And it would just seal it, and when it's not in use, it would also seal it. I'm pretty sure you could.
I think that you could go to Walmart and buy the thing that I use for when I'm kayaking. It's this little envelope. It's a nice, thick plastic envelope, and you put your device inside of there. And there's also a headphone jack that plugs into your phone, and then you can plug your earbuds into a jack on the outside, so that keeps it airtight. And you can actually submerge your phone in this envelope thing, because it's got like the double Ziploc bag type thing and snaps and all this other stuff. And you can actually see through the plastic when you're using the camera. I've actually taken pictures with the camera
with the plastic thing on there. It works just fine. But anyway, it's got a little thing that you can put around your neck, you know, kind of like a dog collar, and that's your dog license. It's your Android phone. But
could you could you do it for a nickel with just a couple of Ziploc bags? Or
I don't know if they would work quite as well. I mean, it's always possible, but this actually fits my phone pretty darn good, so I'm going to stick with it. Besides, I already bought it.
The whole thing was probably cheaper than an iPhone, too.
It was only a couple bucks. I mean, it definitely was less than 10.
I was thinking of making an app for iPhone, for the Fiends, like we have for Android, but to upload an app to the Android Google Store is $25 for life. To upload an app to the iPhone Store is $100 per year. Even the developers have to be more affluent. It's ridiculous. I just don't want to commit to that. So sorry, people. Yeah,
it's kind of like raising the minimum wage to $15. It really removes a lot of the undesirables from your community.
Yeah.
Raise the minimum wage to one iPhone per hour.
I saw something that will baffle all the liberals. It's come out that Apple, which is, you know, loved by elitist liberals, Apple basically pays no taxes. So
yes.
they're not abiding by the social contract, apparently.
Nice. Neither does Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's bad.
That wasn't nice that he didn't have to.
No, he's bad when he does
like
it.
God, man.
And to top it off, I caught part of that debate. I kind of like forced myself to watch it because I want some material for memes.
You mean last night?
No. Oh, there was one last night. Oh yeah, yeah, that's right. The
okay.
The Veeps. Yeah, the Veeps. Yes. But anyway, when I watched it a couple weeks ago, it was Trump versus Clinton, or I don't know, a couple of funny looking people. But anyway, he says, "Yeah, I didn't pay taxes. If I did, they would have wasted it anyway. They would have squandered on stupid stuff." It's like, oh my God, yes, I don't hate him as much, but I still hate him. But he actually spoke the truth.
That makes sense.
Yeah,
nobody. You
know, there was There's a joke meme going around not too long ago. It says, if the Constitution was followed as written or something like that, talk about the original Constitution, it makes these dubious claims that there wouldn't be central banking and there wouldn't be this and there wouldn't be that. And it's all speculative at best. Most likely all those things would happen because, I'm quite honestly, you know, constitutions restrain or guarantee that rights will be protected, kind of like communism guarantees that basic needs will be met. Anyway, the one thing is, if the original Constitution as written was still in force, out of the Trump and Hillary debacle that's going on right now, the loser would be vice president.
The original Constitution, would it be even better? Would that be the Articles of Confederation? Yeah.
This is where you segue into that Onion article about the guy in the Constitution, I think.
Yeah, yeah, I'm saving that one for in case Randy gets droned. Okay. Because it's such a good one. But, yeah, it is. And yeah, under the original Constitution, the person who comes in second place becomes vice president. And that was supposed to be the healing of the nation. So could you imagine if Trump and Hillary really did hate each other as much as they pretend to? How nasty things would be in the White House?
The VP is like the spare tire, right? In case you
Pretty
break
much.
Your president.
Yeah.
You get a
yeah.
flat president.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then also the job of the vice president is to go to like funerals all around the world and stuff like that.
In case if you get a flat president, you know, in case some former Marine obeys his oath, like back in 63. Ooh, too soon.
Wow. But if you get a flat president, does that mean that you have to have an intern come in and jack up the car?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Just want to make sure.
I think anything that happened before you were born, Michael, is not too soon.
Do you remember where you were when Kennedy was killed there, Randy?
Well, I was in school.
So you remember it. I remember it, too. I was in my mama's belly.
Yeah. No, I remember it. You know, the thing that I remember most about you know, hearing things over media like the radio or the TV back in the
Dateline Dallas, President Jack Kennedy late 50s, has just been shot.
The late 50s and early 60s, it was really bad. You could not get good information. A lot of times radio stations, TV stations would be down and you'd get nothing. I mean, I don't know how many times I was just a livid toddler, you know, when Howdy Doody didn't come on and I was sitting there waiting for it. Instead, the test pattern or something comes on. And I do remember when Kennedy was shot, we were trying to hear on the radio and it was all staticky and horrible and that. Things were really different then. But it was sad, even though he was a government official.
By official, you mean thug?
Sure.
The only time I've ever gotten sad about it was there's a Marilyn Manson video where they kind of recreate it, where Marilyn Manson is Jackie Kennedy and Rose McGowan is Jackie O. And I get sad when I see Marilyn Manson get shot in that. I do. I actually have. Yeah.
Jackie Kennedy didn't get shot.
I know, but when Marilyn Manson's playing Jackie Kennedy. I mean, Marilyn Manson's playing JFK. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I was confused. I should have caught
Kennedy,
that when
Jackie
you...
Jackie Kennedy. Whatever.
Yeah, when you named the second person.
Well, it was believable that Marilyn Manson would play Jackie Kennedy in a video, too.
That's why I was buying it. Yeah, okay.
Ask not what your country can do for you or what you can do for your country. Ask what you can do for your damn self.
Yeah.
Yep. So, anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Enough, sweet reminiscences.
There was a series I watched on YouTube. It's called The Men Who Killed Kennedy. And it was really interesting, particularly watching the interviews with people. I think it was shot in the early 80s, and they're talking to all these folks, and everybody's just like, they killed our president. And I just, like, so panic-stricken, like, I don't know, like their magic jewel got taken away, and, like, they were relegated to darkness.
Yeah.
We'll be back.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
And there existed stickers. They used to not exist. Now they exist.
That's funny.
DJ, how do you like the fiend stickers on our coffee pot?
They're gorgeous.
Yes. What do they say?
State speech is hate speech. And BIPCOT.org.
Yeah, and people can get them by going to freedomfiends.com and clicking on the new link at the top. It says stickers, and there will be more designs. So check back regularly. Catch them all.
Worms.
On the site called thehardtimes.net. It's kind of like the Onion, but it's all about music.
Could it be undiagnosed emo?
Maybe.
Non-specific emo, maybe? Maybe there's a little fish in there or something?
So Randy wanted to tell us something about a new show that's based on an absurd premise.
Well, I don't think... Well, actually, the premise of the show... It's also the subject of a Tom Clancy book from, I don't know, 15 years ago or something. But it's a show with Kiefer Sutherland called Designated Survivor, where he's this low-level cabinet member who is off in a hidden somewhere while there's the State of the Union address at the Capitol.
And he's like number 45th in the line of secession to become president or something.
Yeah, 45
the
million.
The 44 are all at the State of the Union. And what happens? A giant meteor of death hits the...
Oh, no, there's a terrorist bombing blows up the Capitol and kills almost everybody in it, including the president, the vice president, and everybody all the way down the line to Kiefer Sutherland. And the Supreme Court gets it, and the Congress gets it. So, you know, it's there's not much left there, and the government isn't real effective at that point. But it's the thing that I kind of like about it is that although Kiefer Sutherland, and he always, you know, plays a hero type, so you're supposed to like him in that, but it's looking like there's this evil, deeper government that is just getting rid of these other guys so they could take over, like maybe a military takeover. So we're trying to figure out what's going on. It's about 3 weeks in, and yeah, I haven't figured out yet whether I liked it or not, but it was kind of well, you know, it's an unlikely premise, but like I said, it already happened in a novel once, and now it happened on TV. So how unlikely is that then?
Well, they tried to make it happen when they killed Lincoln. They killed Lincoln, and there was also a plot to kill the vice president and the secretary of state. What's his name? The guy that bought Alaska for, they call it Seward.
Seward.
Yeah. Yeah, so like they're trying to kill the first three or four people in line. They were trying to kill enough people that a Southern Democrat would be the president, I think.
And it's not completely far-fetched, simply because if 9/11 had happened at a different time, and why couldn't it have been the Capitol? That's exactly what happened in the Tom Clancy book, where the U.S. had been at war with Japan. Japan lost, and so were these two Japanese pilots, or one or two, I don't know if they were both in on it. They were flying a 747 in from Tokyo to Washington, D.C., and they just took out the Capitol during the State of the Union address and made our hero, Jack Ryan. As president, of course, who he had just been sworn in as vice president. So it was really the same kind of thing.
Only one of them was in on it, because the one that was in on it had lost a son during the war.
Yeah, and, I think that's right.
And he killed the other pilot with a steak knife. Now, interestingly enough, in that story, it's called Debt of Honor, I believe it was.
Yes.
Jack Ryan was not actually confirmed as the vice president at the time, which kicked off the story, part of the storyline for the next book, where the vice president, who was forced into resigning because of a sex scandal, very reminiscent of Anthony Weiner, he rescinded his resignation, said, "Hey, I never resigned, so I'm still the vice president, and well, actually, that makes me the president now." And anyway, but yeah, the whole thing got taken out, and it was really interesting because they're talking about, well, this is a time of healing, and you know, let's see if we can do it right and get the right people in charge. And and because it's a fictional novel, it was actually looking like it was going to work. But interestingly enough, I think by the end of the novel, or at least by the end of the third one in that particular series, Congress was just as dysfunctional as it always is.
Oh, it always comes to that. But Jack Ryan was, supernaturally preserved from corruption, in those books, as he always is. Even like one time he was going to have to, there were incoming nuclear missiles coming into Washington, D.C., and it was going to kill everybody. If it happened, he was going to have to declare war on, I don't know, whatever, China or whatever country it was that fired them. And he didn't think, he couldn't push the nuclear button, so he went down to the ship that was supposed to, you know, send up the defense missiles and that, figuring they would either stop the missiles, or if they came in, he'd be dead and wouldn't have to give the order to retaliate.
That was the same book, Debt of Honor. It was the Japanese Senate. He was on the Aegis Destroyer to do the anti-missile system stuff.
Well, that would have been in the next one or after that or so when he was president.
No, Debt of Honor. He was National Security Advisor, I think.
We're out.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
And go on the sidebar of the Freedom Fiend site. We now have Amazon links for Amazon US, Amazon UK, and Amazon Canada due to popular demand. Worms.
This is Lou, and I'm joined by my co-host Randy England.
Right here.
Our special guest for the evening disappeared, Mr. Michael W. Dean. He was here for a couple segments, and then he left. I guess he didn't want to be a guest tonight.
He didn't want us to say this, but I think he was, didn't he get a call from Gary Johnson who wanted to consult with him on his campaign? Did I misunderstand that?
That could have been it, yeah. Or Julian Assange called asking for audio advice, I heard.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Is there anything to that rumor? I don't know. You tell me.
He may have heard that bad audio is a hate crime, and he can't afford any more indictments.
Oh, for real?
Yeah, for yeah.
Real. So anyway, in the last segment, I have to do a, I was wrong, because I said that
you
the,
were.
Yeah, I said that the nuclear launch where Jack Ryan was on the Aegis Destroyer, and they were trying to use the anti-missile system to take out the missiles. I said that that happened in Dead of Honor, and that was Japanese that launched it. And it turns out that in Dead of Honor, the Japanese did develop nuclear missiles, and they did have their silos set up, but they were off in this valley. As a matter of fact, I don't even think it was really the government that did it. I think it was more private industry coordinating with some corrupt government officials.
Shadow group, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so a lot of redundancy there. But anyway, in that one, they took out a dam. The Rangers that got deployed in there, they took out a dam and flooded out the whole valley to destroy the missile silos. And they did that way because they wanted it to be covert. They didn't want to go in with airstrikes and everything else. Because for most of that war, nobody in the general public of either America or Japan knew that there was a war going on.
I think I remember that. Didn't the one missile get away anyway? Wasn't that?
You know what? I can't remember. It's been so long since I've read that book.
It seemed to me that was the one missile that was headed for Washington, D.C., and President Jack Ryan went down to the missile cruiser to watch the result of the trying to take out the incoming nukes.
I think that was the third book of the President Ryan series.
I think you're right.
Yeah, The Bear and the Dragon, I think it was. Because that's where China invaded the Western or Eastern Russia into Siberia, and they called it the Northern Resource Area because they wanted to steal the oil, and I guess there's a bunch of gold there. You know, it's really amazing that as far as Russia goes, they're a lot of the natural resources are in the most inaccessible places to get them.
They really are. You know, the thing that struck me most about that, Clancy didn't actually say it in the book, but I don't know, it seemed like it was probably obvious that these missiles were all coming in, and if they hit and killed, you know, millions of people or whatever, the United States was going to have to strike back, do a nuclear strike. And Jack Ryan was the one that was going to have to make the call. So instead of doing that, he goes down to the cruiser, is on the cruiser when the cruiser is supposed to either save or not save Washington, D.C. And if it's successful, he won't have to retaliate. But if it's not successful, he'll be dead. So either way, he didn't have to die, you know, I guess with that on his conscience. That's kind of the way that I took it from him. And, you know, I kind of liked it in a way. I mean, I couldn't do that. That'd be tough.
Yeah, with Tom Clancy, and particularly with the Ryan character, I think that Clancy really shows his anti-nuclear war side through the Ryan character. I mean, I'm assuming that he's projecting his own values onto the main character of Jack Ryan. But like Jack Ryan, and I'm sure you can relate to this, he's a very devout Catholic, except he's not a Catholic anarchist, he's a Catholic statist, so he's trying to serve two masters, or actually he's trying to be the master and a servant. But Yeah, it's just really interesting how he promotes those different lines. And if you look at the different storylines going from like Hunt for Red October, what was the first one they did? Red Storm Rising. He's a very good storyteller, and he's very good on the military information. I just wish that he wasn't so militaristic and so statist. Well, he's not anymore because he's dead. But
that's true. That's true. But it is hard to read them because you're reading stories from a really great storyteller, but you just wince frequently. And it was easier for me before I, you know, became a libertarian anarchist. Or, like back in the 80s and 90s, it was much easier. I enjoyed them more, and then I kind of enjoyed them less and less for that reason. But that didn't take away from the fact that he really told a good story.
Yeah.
So.
But also, going back to the, what was it, the Bear and the Dragon, where they're at war with China. Yeah, China. It's interesting because U.S. forces wind up going into Russia to help defend against the Chinese invasion coming in from Siberia. And the group that goes to take out the Chinese missile silos is, what's his name, John Clark. Who's one of the other characters who winds up spinning off into his own series under Rainbow Six. But anyway, they go in with Russian Spetsnaz to take out the missile silos, and that's where one of them gets away and leads to what you were talking about with Jack Ryan being on the destroyer, you know, wondering if he's going to have to push the button or not.
Yeah, well, if he was on the destroyer, I guess he knew he wouldn't have to push the button.
It's because he'd be dead. Since I've read it.
Yeah. Well, the missiles were headed at Washington, D.C. He figured if the missiles got through, he'd be dead, so he didn't have to worry about it either way.
Yeah, but then Kiefer Sutherland would be 50th in the line of succession. Somebody would get him the football. It might take a couple months, but he'd push that button, and there'd be nuclear bombs going off because Merca.
He'd do, yeah, Kiefer Sutherland as Jack Bauer would do that. In the new movie, he's a little less, he's not so warlike. He's rather rather cautious and doesn't want to just go attacking anybody just for an excuse.
Yeah, I think torture the football. What's this new series called?
It's Designated Survivor. It's on Wednesday nights at 9 Central, I think it is.
What network?
Oh boy, now you're getting to me here. I'm not sure. It's one of the main. It's one of the old three main networks. What are they? You know, ABC. Might be ABC.
Okay, because I don't own a TV, so I watch everything through like the broadcasting company websites.
Well, that's even better because you can go back and start at episode one if you wanted to.
Yeah.
Rather than being stuck with catching up. Today was Wednesday night, so the third one's over. You'd have to, you know, back in the old days, you had no way of catching up, right?
Oh,
now,
man.
Now it's great.
I remember when I was in like junior high school or maybe I don't even know if I was in junior high school yet, but I used to love watching the Dukes of Hazzard, and there was a night in probably sixth grade, maybe seventh grade, but anyway, there were some girls in the neighborhood, extra girls that wouldn't normally be there. They're there for like a sleepover, and I was out goofing off, yakking with them and everything, and I wound up missing the Dukes of Hazzard that night, and I was like, holy cow, I'm going to go to the end of my life, and I'll never, ever, ever see it, because back then, you didn't have video stores yet. I think VCRs were invented, but there was no way that you were going to go get a series and, you know, forget about DVD or Netflix.
Oh, yeah, right. You know, that was really weird. I mean, if you're, you know, just in our modern times, you don't real like back in the up until 1978 or 9 when the VCRs just started, from then up to the 50s, 60s, and 70s, if a movie came to the theater, like now, you know how it is, whether you rarely watch a movie or you watch them pretty much, there's still that calculus of I really got to see this at the theater, and that may happen to me like once in a year at the most, but it may happen to other people once a week. But and you figure, yeah, but later on I can watch, get it from Redbox, or I can watch it on Netflix or Amazon Prime, mm-hmm. or whatever. And you had that option. But back in the 60s, you would something would come out and you would say, am I going to go see this? Or am I going to give up the idea of ever seeing it again in my whole life? Because not many movies made it back onto TV later. They're just gone forever, unless they're Disney movies, then they come out every 8 years anyway. But you literally had, if you didn't go to see it when it was in the theater that week, you just wave goodbye forever as far as you were concerned.
Yeah, there were some that came to TV from the movie theater. I don't even think that the original Star Wars came to TV until like the 25th anniversary, something like that.
That's probably right. Yeah, and when Star Wars came out, nobody had VCRs.
Right.
I bought one in 1979.
Well, I do remember that shortly after VCRs came out, there were some friends of the family that had one, and they bought a bootlegged copy of Star Wars for like $80. And yeah. back then, that was huge money.
Yeah, but that's how much all movies cost back in 1979. Every movie that you bought cost $75 to $100, and it costs, you know, $3 to rent one, a new one, which was really some heavy change then. That's probably like $15 now.
Or here's one for you. Back in, what was it, 92, I think it was. I was living in Germany at the time, but I came back to the States because my grandmother had passed away. I came back for the funeral and to do a couple other things. And what was it? I think Lethal Weapon 3 had just come out on video. So I was supposed to get a copy of it to take back to Germany with me. And Blockbuster would sell used videos. Previously viewed videos, and after they'd been out for a while, they'd go ahead and sell them for.
They like, didn't need 20 copies; they only needed two. So they'd sell the rest.
So they'd sell it for like 20, but in order to purchase that movie that early on, it would have been like $100. It's like, are you kidding me? $100 for this? So I wound up not buying it. You remember when? When Blockbuster was going to take over the world and crush all the mom and pop video stores and how it would last forever and just become this giant monopoly.
Instead, they all got crushed by Netflix.
Yeah, they got crushed by a vending machine and a mail order service.
Yeah, well, yeah. That
we'll be back.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
So, Randy, you have Amazon Prime, right?
I do. I just got it like a month ago because I was going to have to pay $40 more for something, but I get this big discount if I got Amazon Prime, so I got it finally. And then after I got it, you know, I asked my kids, and they said, oh, man, Dad, everybody has that. I mean, what took you so long?
Well, I like it on a daily basis. I use the music service. I stream the music as I'm driving around, and it works pretty good. It doesn't gobble up too much data, so and that's the big thing that I use it for. I don't use a heck of a lot of the free 2-day air shipping stuff because I just don't order that frequently off of there. And then I do watch the videos, and I have a Amazon Fire Kindle. that I use specifically for downloading movies and TV shows off of the website, and I can store it with me and watch it offline. So I have, you know, access to my different programs. If I'm out camping out in the middle of nowhere and don't have internet access and it's raining cats and dogs, I can go ahead and watch some TV. But anyway, there's a series on there that I just started watching. The first three seasons are on there in Amazon Prime. You have to pay for the fourth season, and I'm not sure where exactly it is on the network, but it's called The Americans. It is on the FX network. I don't know if they're showing season 4 or season 5 on the network, or if they're in hiatus or what. But anyway, yeah, it's a pretty cool series. And going back to talk of the early 80s, it takes place right around the time that Reagan is elected. And the backstory on it is you have a couple, and they are sleeper agents for the Soviet KGB. And what they've done is they've been trained to speak English without an accent, to speak with the proper colloquialisms and things like that. And they got inserted as illegals, as they're called. So they're non-official cover agents. They're not officially connected to the KGB in any form. And they are hardcore spies. And it's really interesting looking at their reactions to Reagan first getting elected, because with a lot of his rhetoric, the Soviets were really panicked over it. They're like, what is this crazy guy going to do? Is he gonna light us up? Is he going to start dropping bombs?
Oh, yeah. Reagan was sold hard by Jimmy Carter as kind of like the Barry Goldwater going to nuke the world guy. And, of course, he didn't end up doing that. I'm glad to say, but yeah, I think that was I guess the Russians were probably a little paranoid about him.
Yeah, so the main camps take place, as far as this family goes, being the illegal Soviet agents, and then you also have the FBI, FCI division, Foreign Counterintelligence, and their job is to catch Soviet spies. Well, catch all sorts of spies, but they focus primarily on the Soviets. And then you also have the Soviet Residentura, the spy division of the Soviet embassy. And so what they're all trying to do is they're trying to spy on each other and get all this information and outmaneuver everybody, and it's really an interesting story, and it does follow along quite a bit with the times. It's, as an example, when Reagan was shot, the Foreign Counterintelligence Division was trying to figure out if the Soviets had anything to do with it, and then the KGB was trying to figure out what the heck was going on, if the Americans were going to retaliate and start launching missiles. So as you're watching this, and particularly if you've lived through these times, it's really, really interesting, and it really brings back some memories.
Yeah, because they didn't realize at first that the shooting was just done to impress Jodie Foster. Isn't that right?
Yeah,
and didn't John Hinckley just get out of jail?
I don't know.
Last month, I think.
I know that he had. I think he had some sort of release program. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think he may be permanently out or on supervised release or something like that. Whatever they call it.
I do know that there were some questions about the Hinckley and Bush connection, and there were some thoughts that maybe Papa Bush had something to do with it. I don't really know. I have no opinion on the matter. But anyway,
if you did, you couldn't say.
It's a good series. Check it out. You'll like it.
I will.
The Americans. We'll be back in the second hour.
See you then, Lou.
Yes.
Worms.
Yeah.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists who think you need a government permission slip for everything? Everything you do is an A to B conversation, and the government should see their way out of it. Create true free markets by adopting the BIPCOT No Government License. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows use or modification of any product, service, or software except by governments or government agents. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
This is the Freedom Fiends, a symposium of unsupervised sounds that caress your freedom fiend bone. I'm Randy England, and co-host Lou Fiend has hacked into the government's subspace mind control to beam our pirate signal of protest directly to your frontal lobes. So lose your tinfoil hats and know that you are free. Hi, Lou. Glad to have you back. We're in the top of the second hour and ready to move on, I think. Is that right?
I'm always glad to be had, and yes, we are.
Yes, yes, and you are. We have you here.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure being had.
You know, I was looking today at the news, of course, and the thing in the news, which is, I mean, it's refreshing in that it's not political. Yet, well, maybe it is, but it could be bad, and that's Hurricane Matthew.
Yeah, well, which, just like politics, it sucks.
And or blows.
Yeah.
Either way.
And well, I didn't want to say that, but and there's also horrible economic information coming out about it.
Well, there is, and with it, you know, it may be, they're thinking by tomorrow night, you know, hitting or coming up against, what, the coast of Florida or something? I'm not sure. They don't know exactly where the thing will go, but everybody is batting down in Florida, I believe. And, of course, the politicians in Florida are rushing around threatening merchants everywhere that they better not raise prices. And so there's, I'm looking at an article now, how to protect yourself from, it's called price gouging during Hurricane Matthew. And, you know, it starts out with the government threats and how the residents can protect themselves ahead of time. And part of their advice is good. Like, one of the ways you protect yourself is to go and get some extra water and food and flashlight batteries and that sort of thing. And that's good advice. I don't know what I'd need the government for to tell me that. But that's fine. But the other way you protect yourself is to make sure you rat out anybody who seems to have raised their prices and in the time of shortages and at a time of disaster. And it just seems like that... you know, that's the thing that bothers me so much about these anti-price gouging laws is that they run counter to any common sense, you know, of any kind at all, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I think the politicians believe that in an emergency situation, they can suspend the laws of economics.
But people love these laws, though. They really do.
Well, people are idiots. I'm sorry. They're idiots. They're voters. They're idiots. They're economically illiterate. They went to the government indoctrination gulag, and they turned out to be idiots. So whenever somebody says, anarchy can't work because people are too stupid, just ask them, well, who handles education right now?
No, that's right. You know, I think, you know, most people have probably run into this kind of thing before. I mean, if you have you know, we get some bad snowstorms even down here in Missouri from sometimes, and you know, you get the point where the town has almost come to a stop or something because of this big ice storm. And if I could make it out to the corner hardware store, you know, wanting to buy some ice melt, you know, or a snow shovel, I'm not sure, you know, either one, something to help me with the storm. I'm almost always at that point after this thing is hit, I'm going to find out that there's just an empty pallet where the ice melt used to be. And maybe the sign will say, you know, ice melt, $2 or something like that. And it's sold out, or $4 and it's sold out. And heck, I only needed one bag and I needed it bad enough. I'd have gladly paid $10 for the bag if I could have had it. And if the store had been thinking, they could have helped me out by raising their price to $10, because I could have had a bag, and everybody could have had a bag instead of the first 10 jerks that came to the door got 5 bags because it was still so cheap. And that just, I mean, the logic of that, it's obvious that that's what's happened. The government is mandating and encouraging a race to the store. Like, yeah, you can get some ice melt. You can get not only what you need, you can get 10 times what you need if you can get there first. And that's what, you know, the anti-price gouging laws do. They just ensure that, you know, we can't buy the stuff we need at the very time when we're desperately short. You know, they ought to call these, like, let's run out of everything as fast as we can when we need it the most laws, because that's exactly what they do. And that, you know, there's no reason for these laws at all, except, you know, I'm saying people really like them. The idea they're of the laws. To soothe the feelings of, you know, angry people, you know, they're mad.
Economic illiterates.
They think a greedy merchant has taken advantage of them. And it also, the other thing that's real popular is that whenever this happens, some prosecutor, the state attorney general or somebody, gets up and they've got a platform where they can pretend like they're some kind of champion, you know, of the consumer. And so they get big, you know, kudos, you know, for being for the little guy and everything. And that's just totally backwards. And I don't think I have zero hope that they will ever figure out that this is an asinine policy, because their policy meshes with the way people feel but has no connection to reality. It's just crazy. You know, the same thing you'd have would be like if you had a hotel, you know, and there was a big storm and you didn't raise the price of the rooms, so people would all come in and everybody would get a room because the prices weren't too high, and you could put maybe half as many people in there than if you doubled the price of the room, and then people would start doubling up, or a family would get one room instead of two, you know, or a couple poor families would go together, you know, to get a room. You could end up giving rooms, you know, 200 people instead of 100 people. But no, the policy demands that the first people to come get the room, and the rest of you can sleep in a ditch somewhere. You know, the whole thing is just nuts. And it's like, well, you know, people are, it's just those greedy merchants, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just greed.
I'd like to read from the article here, and there's some really stupid stuff in here. Price gouging is selling essential commodities, dwelling units, or self-storage facilities for an amount that grossly exceeds the average price for that commodity during the 30 days before the declaration of the state of emergency, the Attorney General's office said. Essential commodities include food, ice, gas, and lumber, the office said. Non-essential items, including alcohol and cigarettes, are not covered under Florida price gouging statutes. Talk to smokers and drinkers. Those things are essential. Florida consumers need to be diligent during the state of emergency to ensure they do not become the victim of price gouging. Blah, 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 blah. More stupid stuff. On a side note, I was in a state of Michigan building today. I occasionally have to go in there every now and again for meetings and stuff. And there was a sign on the wall talking about the EBT card, the food assistance, and it shows a picture of it. And that's kind of like in small letters, but in big bold letters underneath that, it says buying, selling, and trading is a felony. And yeah, I saw the part about the buying, selling, and trading being a felony first, and then I looked up and saw the whole thing about the food stamp card. And I'm thinking, wow, these commies are just getting more blatant about it. But the thing is, when you have a storm, when you have a situation like this, this is basic econ 101. It's called supply and demand. You have a large jump in the demand for these particular products. You have a large decrease in the supply. So naturally, the price goes up. Because the price goes up, this is a market signal to people, whether it's a traditional distributor or some guys with a pickup truck that load up that pickup truck, but that is the signal to start moving stuff from places that have a surplus of these items. For example, if Eastern Florida gets clobbered, but the Western part doesn't get clobbered over on the Gulf side, well, that's a signal that people from the Western side can move their bottled water and their batteries and all this other stuff over to the ocean side and to the people that need it. And because they're going to go through this effort, you know, they're going to get a premium on their work. They're going to get extra money.
And yeah, why should I haul my water over to the east coast of Florida from the west coast if it's going to be a crime for me to cover, you know, make a profit off of it?
Yeah.
Even considering the shipping that I had to add on to my costs.
Yeah. And I wrote an article about this for the Fiend blog. It was November 11th, 2012, and it was about, I think it's Hurricane Sandy.
Sandra, and, yes.
Yeah, and the opening paragraph, this past week, the east coast of the U.S. was hit by devastation and destruction, and it got hit by a hurricane, too. The real damage was caused by the government response, big surprise, the lack of preparedness for the people living there, even bigger surprise, and the prohibition of those willing to help from actually providing that help. I am Jack's complete lack of surprise. And in this particular case, people were filling up 5-gallon gas cans and moving them from one location up to where they had plenty of gas, up to places where they need it. And just like you said, the increase in prices is a market signal to economize these resources, to use less of them. So what it actually does is it rations and makes sure that more people can purchase bottles of water. When I go to my local Walmart, the store brand of bottled water is 88 cents a gallon. That's the same price as down in Detroit. It's probably the same price that is there in Jeff City with you. But if you have an emergency situation and everybody goes in there and buys all the water off the shelf, like what happened in, I think it was 2003 when most of the Eastern Seaboard lost electricity, you know, you go into the grocery store and all the bottled water is gone, all the batteries are gone, all this stuff is gone because there's no market signal to buy less. You don't have this rationing, which actually makes it easier for more people to buy water. You can get a couple people going in there and buying it all up off the shelves.
Oh, sure. And why wouldn't they? The price hasn't gone up at all. You know, and the other incentive, the incentive for people to bring stuff to the disaster or the shortage area, that incentive is destroyed. But another incentive that's also destroyed is that for the merchants, you know, who may are thinking about how many snow shovels they're going to stock, they're only going to stock in just as many as they're sure they can sell, because they know they can't get an extra profit to cover their risk if they raise the price of snow shovels when the storm hits.
Yeah,
and so.
How about
you're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio worms.
This is the Freedom Fiends. Hi, Lou. We're back.
Hi, Randy. I'm front.
Yes.
So I can't remember when I started to say, how about, I can't remember what I was going to say. So what
well,
were
we
talking,
talking
about?
About
the jar my memory.
Well, we were talking about the pesky price gouging statutes that, and I, you know, I don't know how it is, you know, in your state or in Florida and that, but in Missouri, they always go after, you know, anybody that raises prices here, you know, for whatever thing. Usually it often involves gasoline, but they hang it on one lousy little statute, and this really annoys me. They have a statute that says it's unlawful. This is an anti-fraud statute, Class D felony, and you're not allowed to use fraud, deception, false pretense, misrepresentation, or unfair practice in regard to sale or advertisements. And the unfair practice with regard to advertisements, see the gas stations, you know, they put the price up there on a sign, so that's advertising. They go after all of these gas stations in our state when the prices are getting too high and hang it all on this one statute. And it's really suspicious because it makes you wonder if they actually had a trial and charged somebody of unfair practices in advertising. I mean, you know, they're advertising their actual price, you know, so I don't know.
So if what you mention, the deal is. So if you mention fraud and unfair practices, does this apply to, I don't know, campaign promises?
Oh, well, of course not, because those would be made by politicians. And and obviously they didn't mean to catch themselves in their own dragnet. But
if fraud laws applied to politicians, we would be kind of like Spain. But anyhow.
And we'll get into that later, won't we?
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, here in the tax farm that I live in of Michigan, I don't call it my state. I call it the tax farm that I live in. There's they have the anti filling the void laws, or the anti supply and demand price adjustment laws, and
filling the void.
Yeah. Yeah, because when you have shortages and people bring stuff in, that's filling the void. But what I was going to ask you before we went to break that I forgot about and I remembered would be, how about if I went into the grocery store and I bought all the bottled water that I could, because, you know, it's still 88 cents a gallon. And I go in there, I just buy up as much as I can, and I take it out and I put it in the bed of my truck. And as people are coming out scratching their head and being all bummed out and everything because all the water is gone because the price didn't adjust and it's an emergency situation, they need water. I don't know. What if I like pulled out a sign that says water, $5 a gallon? You're already here, so you may as well buy it from me.
Well, yeah, but just don't get caught.
Right. But that's what it encourages. It encourages somebody to go and buy all that water just so that they can jack up the price themselves. So in order to prevent price gouging, they're actually creating price gouging.
But price gouging is good. Price gouging is a public service.
Yeah, but when they create it.
Because, oh, yeah.
Go ahead. Because to them, price gouging is bad. But if they create it, you know, it's their creation.
Well, they create.
Am I making sense here?
Well, yeah. If you had no price gouging laws and you could do whatever you wanted, there would still be shortages, but they would be alleviated by merchants who were more likely to stock more stuff because they knew they could take advantage in an emergency, and it would be alleviated by people who would quickly be willing to come rushing in with trucks full of stuff. Both of those things, the merchants are not going to carry the excess merchandise because they know they're not going to be able to get their money back for it, you know, when there isn't an emergency, and nobody's going to rush in with trucks full of water or gas or anything else because they're going to risk being charged with a crime for price gouging. And they aggravate those problems by having the anti-price gouging laws by making the scarcity worse.
Yeah. Well, Walmart has a tendency to bring in these different goods, and they don't adjust the price, which is kind of a bad thing in some regards, because it brings heat on other stores that do adjust the price because of the additional costs that they incur.
Yeah, but that's their choice, though. Yeah. I mean, a merchant doesn't have to raise them. It depends on how he looks at it. If he wants to be some kind of philanthropist and hold the price where it is, I can understand somebody might want to do that. But if he was really thinking clearly, he would also be thinking, I need to raise the price so I don't run out. I'd like the last guy to come in today to be able to buy some of this, not just the first guys in the first hours. And the only way you can accomplish that, I suppose, is raising the price. Or you could just say one per customer. Sometimes they do that.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Thank you for being a fiend. You may know the show is Trigger Weens. We're saying worms and your new bigger buttons on. And if you threw a party and invited every yak you knew, you would see we'd still follow the NAP, and we're covered by Bipcot. Thank you for being a fiend.
Cat.
Freedom. Yes. Go to right, so,
okay, so there's one part of this article that's not horrible. I would really change the title of this section because they call it how to be prepared to avoid price gouging. And what it should be called is how to be prepared to avoid being a victim of being unprepared. To help avoid being a victim of being unprepared, have the following items on hand. 5 gallons of drinking water per person in your household. At least 2 working flashlights, a portable radio, a telephone with a cord. But that's only if you have actual home telephone service through like
Bob. That's so weird.
Yeah, and if you have the what happens is there's a little electrical charge that goes through the cord, but if the phone lines are down, it's going to be useless. But if the power is lost, then a phone with a cord should work, provided that the phone line is still up, and provided that you have an actual telephone line service and you're not on the VoIP or the internet base, which most everybody has today. But anyway, an ample supply of batteries to power those and other items, a full tank of propane and charcoal if you have a charcoal grill, non-perishable food items, formula and diapers if you have young children in the home. Now, I mentioned the power outage in 2003, a little bit earlier, where most of the Eastern Seaboard, to include Michigan, lost power. And I was completely unprepared. I didn't have bottled water or any of this stuff. This was stuff that I just didn't think about. I wasn't even concerned that, you know, the government's going to come help us out. I was just not even thinking that there was going to be a big storm or somebody in Canada was going to trip over a plug and make everything go dark for 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, you flip the switch, the light comes on, turn on the faucet, the water comes out.
Yeah. So what I do now, as I mentioned before, water at the Walmart is 88 cents a gallon. So I have, I think, 12 gallons down in the basement. I also have another 8 gallons in my little cupboard as far as extra goes. And then I go to the local spring, which I don't even really need to worry about having the extra water during the summertime. But anyway, I go to the local spring and I can fill up my water cans. It doesn't cost anything. But having that on hand before a storm comes, because it's Florida. You know you're going to get hit with hurricanes. It happens almost every year. And the worst case scenario is you spend $6 on water before this happens, and you wind up using it later on.
Yeah, how could you not be ready, right?
Yeah. As far as the flashlights go, I bought a bunch of these little LED flashlights at Walmart for $1.
Oh, buck a piece, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, buck a piece, little Ozark Trail ones. And they
with batteries. Good. Yeah. With batteries, yeah. Right?
You can't even buy 3 AAA batteries for 99 cents, but here you are getting a working flashlight and 3 batteries for $1. Portable radio, I have no real strong feelings on that. And if you want news, I guess it's a good thing. But and just as far as having these little basic things, it's not that difficult to do. And one of the things in 2003, and had I not filled up my gas tank before this happened, I would have been screwed. There were darn few gas stations that were able to provide gasoline in the beginning because they had to get generators out there. So if I was out of gasoline, I would have been SOL. But now I keep a couple extra gas cans in the garage, and I go buy gasoline when the price gets low. I put in fuel stabilizer, which is supposed to keep it workable for up to 24 months. So really being unprepared for these types of things, whether it's bad weather, hurricanes down in Florida, snowstorms up here, and stuff. It's pretty much a choice to be unprepared.
I think you're right, and the cost is not that great, you know, to do the smaller things. you know, buy a generator. That's not cheap, you know, but.
Well, here's something. Yeah. Here's something to think about. If you're walking into the Walmart store, they have these little pallets in the aisleway by the food where they got stuff that's on sale. You see the canned vegetables or canned soup in there on a reduced price. And when I see canned vegetables at like 50 cents a pop, yeah, I buy a whole rack of them.
Do you rotate your stock?
Of course.
Well, an old restaurant hand like you, right?
I worked in a party store in high school. So, but yeah, if you got it for 50 cents, you get a 12 pack for $6. It's hard to beat that, and that's how you that's how you cover your food. So if you have the stuff in advance, you don't have to worry about if the store's going to be out.
Of course, this advice is not going to do you any good if you're not ready now and you live in Orlando, probably.
I don't know if Orlando's going to get hit, but if you're on the East Coast, if you're on the ocean side, you're probably in trouble. Our good friend Prof. CJ is getting ready for it.
Oh yeah, he lives in Florida. Is he someplace?
He's Florida man.
Yeah, I mean, it's coming up, what, the east side of it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's on the ocean side. But anyway. Yeah,
that's true.
So, yeah, it's not like we haven't seen this before. It's not like we haven't seen people saying, I don't have any water. I don't have any food. Yeah, this stuff happens every year. It's like the idiots that go ice fishing up here in Michigan. They go out on the Great Lakes, and they're out there in like March or something like that, and the ice breaks off, and they get stranded out there, and the Coast Guard has to come rescue them, and they're like, I don't know what happened. This is like 2 years in a row. It's not very smart.
Yeah, and then after you get flooded out, you rebuild.
Yeah.
And someone sells you flood insurance. Someone who's either doing that with taxpayers' money or doesn't have a brain, one of the two.
Yeah. I blame government schools for it. And speaking of solving the problem of government, sacrificing government for the greater good, Spain is doing that.
What is Spain doing?
Spain doesn't have a national government right now.
Boy, am I jealous.
I know, for real. There's two different articles here. One is from Mises.org. It's a little blog post. With neither party able to secure a majority of seats in the national legislature and the two parties unable to agree on a coalition government for the last 10 months, Spain has a do-nothing caretaker government for the first time in its history. Gosh, I want to be like Spain. While basic government services continue, which means they probably still have SWAT raids for all sorts of different things, no new legislation is being proposed. Foreign policy is stuck in place. I don't think they're as bad as the USSA as far as foreign policy, And many infrastructure and other government projects are frozen. Morose. In contrast to dire predictions of chaos, everything is proceeding smoothly, and some Spaniards are learning a valuable lesson from the resilience of society when left to its own voluntary devices. The lesson has been pithily summed up by Felix Pastor, a language teacher, who states, "No government, no thieves."
Yeah, lots of less thieves. I bet the media, the news media in Spain doesn't like it.
Yeah, it's where all their information comes from. They cover government activity.
You know, it's really annoying when you get to, say, the end of the year and then somebody comes on to NPR and is lamenting the fact that with all the gridlock this year that the government didn't do anything. And
they always do plenty.
Well, no, I'm thinking, let's cheer. They did nothing. And Spain is locked into this. Do they think they're going to have a, relief anytime soon to get their government governing again?
From the New York Times article on this, it says, after two grueling national elections in 6 months, and with a third vote possible in December, no party has won enough seats or forged the coalition needed to form a government. So it sounds like they're going to have another election, but I'm wondering if the population there is just burned out on elections and people are going to be like, let's just put it off for a year or two. We're burned out. We need some rest. That's what I'm hoping for. But let's see now what else we got here. Okay. So, yeah, that has produced an unprecedented public spectacle. Politicians scheme and plot, but reject the difficult compromises needed to form a government. So the only thing that's saving the people of Spain is the politicians scheming and plotting.
Yes. I like the guy...
Voters watch ruefully with a mix of fascination and contempt. The contempt is probably that they might come to a consensus and form a new government. On Saturday, the socialist leader Pedro Sanchez stepped down in a move that could move the way for his party to agree to the re-election of Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy and a government led by a conservative Popular Party. So.
Conservative Popular Party. I like the store owner who said Spain would be fine if we just got rid of most of the politicians and three-fourths of the government employees. And then he says, too little government is better than too much. You know, something is obvious in that, and you still get to sound really wise.
Yeah,
of course, I got to say it too, so, you know. Secondhand wiseness. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think particularly in Europe, they're seeing what the expansion of the state has done. And Spain has had a really rough time. Their economic situation has been very horrible for a number of years. And a lot of it comes down to this central planning. It's like they have aspirations of being Venezuelan. Because of Hugo Chavez and his wage and price controls, similar to the activities of the Florida state government during emergencies. So, yeah, was it Hugo Chavez and then Nicolas Maduro after him have imposed the anti-price gouging laws to create shortages? And Spain, they've had their fair share of economic central planning. Yes.
The anti-dog-eat-dog laws. Yeah. I think Spain has been running short of money for about 350 years, ever since the gold from the New World started running out.
Yeah.
They were really spoiled for a while.
Yeah. Well, then they had silver, too.
Well, yes, but silver, they used silver for their sidewalks, though, when the gold was really, really flying in. Because silver will tarnish. I mean, who wants that?
Yeah, I guess they didn't have Brasso yet back then. Anyway.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's really interesting. And quite frankly, it's, what was it, New York City not too long ago, the police went on a working strike where they quit revenue generating and all this other stuff, and crime actually dropped.
Yeah, that's kind of like the Kansas City patrol experiment.
Yeah.
Where crime didn't go down when the cops stopped patrolling the roads.
Yeah.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Do you want to make money working at home? Join the high-stakes world of selling BIPCOT NoGov merchandise. The BIPCOT NoGovernment license is licensed under the BIPCOT NoGovernment license, which means that you can go to BIPCOT.org, download the high-res logos, and make your own BIPCOT NoGovernment merchandise to sell. The best part is you keep all the profits. And if you send a picture and mail a sample to the good people at BIPCOT.org, they might even help you promote it for free.
As long as you're not a government or a government agent and you don't advocate for any governments in any way.
Help promote liberty, make money, have fun, meet interesting people, be the envy of all your friends. Be the coolest kid at Fiendfest Somalia. Laugh at the state while it collapses, all while making and selling your own BIPCOT.org merchandise. What will you design? Get creative. Lots of folks are doing it, but there's always room for more. There are BIPCOT t-shirts, flags, drink cozies, turntable mats, BIPstrong bracelets, BIPCOT stickers, playing cards, and even Glock pistol backplates. You might even get mentioned on the Freedom Fiends. You're still kicking yourself for missing out on the start of Bitcoin. Don't miss out on BIPCOT. Get in on the ground floor now.
Not a guarantee.
Start your new life today at BIPCOT.org. That's BIPCOT.org.
Redemption in the third act.
Yes, we're back.
Yes. And This article is from The Onion. It's from November 14th of 2009. And I feel like I could have written this article myself because I've talked about this so many times. Area man passionate defender of what he imagines the Constitution to be. Spurred by an administration he believes to be guilty of numerous transgressions, self-described American patriot Kyle Mortensen, 47, is a vehement defender of ideas he seems to think are enshrined in the U.S. Constitution and principles that brave men have fought and died for solely in his head. Our way of life is under siege. Oh my God, it's like listening to, I don't know, Michael Savage or Glenn Beck or something like that. Our way of life is under siege, said Mortensen, whose understanding of the Constitution derives not from a close reading of the document, but from talk show pundits, books by television personalities, and the limitless expanse of his own colorful imagination. It's time for true Americans to stand up and protect the values that make us who we are. According to Mortensen, an otherwise mild-mannered husband, father, and small business owner, the most serious threat to this fanciful version of the 222-year-old Constitution is the attempt by far-left traitors to strip it of its religious foundation. Right there in the preamble, the authors make the priorities clear. One nation under God, said Mortensen, attributing to the Constitution a line from the Pledge of Allegiance, which itself did not include any reference to a deity until 1954. Well, there's a reason they put that right at the top. Men like Madison and Jefferson were moved by the ideals of Christianity and wanted the United States to reflect those values as a Christian nation, continued Mortensen, referring to the father of the Constitution, James Madison, considered by many historians to be an atheist, and Thomas Jefferson, an Enlightenment-era thinker who rejected the divinity of Christ and was in France at the time the document was written. The words on the page speak for themselves. According to sources who have read the nation's charter, the U.S. Constitution and its 27 amendments do not contain the word God or Christ.
Yeah. I think that's true. It's a document, you know, setting out the powers of the government,
yeah.
Not a manifesto.
Yeah, and this whole article is just straight up gold, was it? And let's not forget that when the Constitution was ratified, it brought freedom to every single American.
Almost, yes, yes.
Yeah, so the freedom our founding fathers spilled their blood freedoms our founding fathers spilled their blood for are vanishing before our eyes, Mortensen said. In under a year, a fascist socialist regime has turned a proud democracy into a totalitarian state that will soon control every facet of American life. Don't just take my word for it, Mortensen said. Try reading a newspaper or watching the news sometime.
And his kid said, Dad's great, but listening to all that talk radio has put some weird ideas into his head, said daughter Samantha, freshman at Reed College in Portland, Oregon. He believes the Constitution allows the government to torture people and ban gay marriage and yet doesn't even know that it guarantees universal health care. Well, she's got a problem too, doesn't she?
Yeah, she probably learned the Constitution from her old man.
Mortensen told reporters he'd fight to the bitter end for what he roughly supposes the Constitution to be. He acknowledged, however, that it might already be too late to win the battle. I think I agree with him on that. It's too late. Yeah, you know.
Well, here's a thought for you. The hardcore Constitution licker always says, "Well, the Constitution didn't fail. The people failed." Well, if the failures are blamed strictly on the people and not the Constitution, then when things go well, the people succeeded and the Constitution did not succeed, which makes the Constitution completely irrelevant.
Yeah, I mean, if we could wind the clock back and make it exactly like it was when it was ratified, all we would do is just
make Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump the vice president. Just
slide back down the hill again, so why bother?
Yeah, and we'll do it in a fraction of the time because now the technology exists to inflict tyranny where it did not exist as much in the founding era.
Indeed. Indeed.
This notion that you can scribble the right words down on paper in just the right order that will keep control freaks from being control freaks, yeah, it doesn't work. But anyway, thanks for coming on tonight, Randy. It's always a pleasure.
Lou, and it's great to be with you, and let's do it again.
Yeah, and thanks to all the listeners. And for more Freedom Fiends, go to freedomfiends.com.
That's right.
Worms.
Worms.